lines. I'm a little off script tonight, but I believe that this is where God would have us to be in Numbers chapter 21. I want you to begin with me in verse number 1. It says, "And when King Arad, the Canaanite, which dwelt in the south, heard tell that Israel came by the way of the spies, then he fought against Israel and took some of the prisoners. And Israel vowed a vow unto the Lord and said, If thou wilt indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their cities. And the Lord hearkened to the voice of Israel and heard up and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them in their cities. And he called the name of the place Hormah. And they journeyed from Mount Hor by way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses, Wherefore have ye brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, and neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said unto Moses, Make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole, and it shall come to pass that every one which is bitten, when he looketh upon it, it shall live. And Moses made a serpent of brass and put it upon a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived." And tonight I'd like to speak to you on this subject, unthankfulness, a subtle disease with a shocking end. Unthankfulness, a subtle disease with a shocking end. I remember when I entered my third decade of life. It's not been that long ago. As I entered my third decade of life, there were some strange things that began happening in my body. There were certain things that I began to feel, and I just chalked it up to old age and stress. I thought, I've never been any older than this in my life, and I've never had more stress in my life, so undoubtedly this is what growing old is all about. But the longer I went, and the more my wife preached to me, the more I began to realize something was just not right. I can still remember coming home after 5 o'clock. My wife would be cooking supper, and I'd say, Honey, I'm going to lay down and take a nap. And so I did. I'd take a 2-hour nap. I remember waking up and still feeling just very worn down. I would eat. I would drink. And about 9 o'clock, which is totally uncharacteristic of me, I would go to bed and I could sleep all the way until 7 o'clock in the morning and still feel like I'd not rested very well. I think another one of the major signs that I began to see is sometimes my vision was blurred. Particularly, I didn't think about it until after the fact, whenever I would load up on Krispy Kreme donuts or things of that type of a nature. I can still remember my sight would sometimes become blurred. I would feel very sluggish. And perhaps one of the most telltale signs to me is I remember having to drink all the time. It got so bad. And by the way, this is not a health advisory, but if these fit you, you ought to go to the doctor. But I remember going to the gas station, and when I would get something to drink, honestly, I would get my wife a bottle of water. I would get a gallon of water. And that's how thirsty I was. Well, finally, after a while, my wife looked at me and she said, Honey, you have to go to the doctor. I said, All right, I will. I'll never forget making the appointment and going to Boiling Springs that day, and the doctor. Told me, he said, Now listen, before you come, he said, just be sure to eat a huge meal, eat potatoes, drink all the soda pop you can. He said, I want you to do that before you come. And that was no problem to me. And so I remember going there and went through all this battery of tests. I still remember the blood work and all kinds of other things, that just a full exam. And finally, we were almost to the end. And he said, You know, you have checked out well up to this point. He said, Well, I'll tell you what. He said, We have one last test. And I thought, Praise the Lord. He said, Let's just check your blood sugar. I said, all right. And so he poked my finger. He checked my blood pressure or my glucose. And just in a matter of about 30 seconds, I'll never forget him looking up at me. And he said, you know what this is? I said, no, I don't. He said, 389. A number that should have been between 80 and 100. And I remember he told me, welcome to the world of diabetes. I said, you've got to be kidding. He said, no. He said, that's the reason why. I began to do a little research, and on my father's side especially, genetically, everybody had it. I wish I would have thought about that earlier on. I think I could have done some things preventively. But boy, I remember when I was diagnosed with that, boy, I was devastated. Here I was told that I had a physical infirmity, and it was one that at the time I knew very little about, but after a while I learned, listen, if you straighten up your eating habits and you exercise and you take care of yourself, listen, you can make it. But boy, I can still remember that diagnosis. But have you ever had a time, maybe in recent days, when the Holy Spirit, the divine doctor, made a diagnosis in your own heart? And usually when that happens, that diagnosis can be very devastating, because all of a sudden we realize we're not perfect, we're not invincible, or in the physical side, we're not young anymore. But I want to tell you tonight of a disease that I believe is devastating. I believe it devastates us personally, I believe it devastates us corporately, and it is a very, very deadly disease. It's called unthankfulness. It's interesting when you read in 2 Timothy chapter 3, while I won't turn there. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, it talks about all these things in the last days. Disobedient to parents. But one of those things is unthankful. And folks, I really believe, and by the way, in preaching this message tonight, I believe that unthankfulness is a roadblock to revival. As we live in our day and time of entitlement, the more steeped we become in entitlement, the less possibility of seeing revival. Because we've become so unthankful. And to be quite honest, sometimes we as Christians, we've become so unthankful that we rarely thank God for the greatest event that ever took place upon the face of God's earth. And that was the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. But based on what I see in Numbers 21, I believe tonight that God hates unthankfulness just as much tonight as He ever has. While we can preach about the social injustices of the left, we can preach about the pressing wickedness in our day and society, I believe in our churches it's of the greatest importance to purge ourselves of the sin of unthankfulness. And so tonight, I want you to see several things. I want you to let the divine doctor do a diagnosis, and can I tell you, his diagnosis is cheap, it's free. I didn't say it was painless. But you can rest assured, while you don't know that your doctor has your best interest in mind, you know that Jesus does. And so we begin our story tonight by seeing, first of all, a people discouraged. In the first four verses, or the first four verses, we see the nation of Israel in a discouraged state. Now, why is it tonight that we see them in a discouraged state? Well, notice the end of verse number 1. Here they are in a battle, and they took some of them prisoners. We find that they're in a battle that is taking place. This hardship has occurred. Some of them being incarcerated. He fought against Israel, and he took some of them as prisoners. They suffered loss. War back in those days, a little different than this one. Now it seemingly is fought with lasers and troops. We're talking about manual labor, people going out and fighting. And there are people that are incarcerated as a result of this fighting. They're taken away from their families. You can imagine how demoralizing that is. You ever had a demoralizing experience yourself? You ever had an unexpected loss? You ever had times where things didn't go your way? That's what's preceding the attitude of the nation of Israel. It's really easy to knock Israel and say, well, they're just an unthankful bunch. But we get discouraged just like they do. And so not only do you see that some of these were incarcerated, Israel prays and they're like, hey, Lord, help us to beat these guys. And then after they do, in verse 4, and they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. You ever had a long trip? There's a sentence I would love to erase out of my children's vocabulary. How much longer? Dad, how much longer is it? They asked that an hour ago, and 5 minutes after they asked it, how much longer? I'm like, do the math. 5 minus 60, 55 minutes. Sometimes we're like children. We go away and it seems hard and it seems rough. It seems long. Many of you, you're like, I just want to get from the shortest distance, from point A to point B. That's the way that I am. Men, we're like that, are we not? When we go to the store, listen, we don't go down every aisle. We make a beeline to every place where we need to go. The ladies are the one that moseys up and down and up and down and up and down. And by the time we buy our things, we just head back to the car and we read half the New Testament. But listen, whether you're a male or a female here tonight, let me say this. If you're here tonight and you're like, you know, I'm just a pretty much a matter-of-fact person. I want to do things the easiest way and I want to do them the simplest. Hey, I don't mean to discourage you tonight, but I do want to throw you into the realm of reality. Many times God doesn't lead you down the easiest path. But He'll always lead you down the best one. But it's hard to get sight of that sometimes when you're tired. When it's your feet that are hurting. When your stomach is growling. It's hard, and they were discouraged in the way. And do you notice the depths of their discouragement when it says, and the soul of the people? I had this saying when I came to college, if something happened, I would exclaim, oh my soul. Usually it was something of great depth. But I'm talking about the innermost part of your being. Have you ever had a time where you just feel that discouragement? It's just starting to set in, but you sort of fight it out, and it's not eating you to the core. But then you have those days where, I mean, you're as low as can be. That's where Israel's at. And I want to tell you this thought tonight. Discouragement is the door through which unthankfulness often enters. Discouragement is the door through which unthankfulness often enters. We become low, we become disillusioned. And at that point, we begin to doubt God. But I remind you tonight that unthankfulness is a horrible disease. And sometimes it afflicts God's children. So first of all, we see a people discouraged. Second of all, we see a people deprived. I guess I should say tonight, deprived in quotes, if I could. It wasn't that they were actually deprived of what they needed, but they were deprived of what they wanted. And there's a big difference. In verse number 5, and the people spake against God. Now, don't you be too hard on Israel, because we do the same thing if we're not careful. A car breaks down, we're disillusioned about this or that, and sometimes we talk and we complain against God Himself and against Moses, Israel does. And notice what they say, wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? You say, why do you read it that way? Because I think they said it that way. I really don't think they just said in robotic fashion, why have you brought us to the wilderness to die? There's some of you here, you're very impassioned when you talk to each other. I knew of one family, they were Italian. And it was amazing. I watched two brothers talk. It was like a street fight. And when they were done, they just hugged each other and went on. That was normal for them. But there may be some of you, you're very low-key, but you get impassioned in some way or another. I believe they're so disgruntled to their soul that they say, God, have you brought us here to die? For some reason, even at least based on my own personal experience, I don't think they're the only ones to ever feel that way. We say, Lord, there doesn't seem to be any purpose in this. Lord, it seems senseless. And then here's their deprivation, for there is no bread, neither is there any water. And our soul loatheth this light bread. I want to encourage you, don't read the Bible in 2015 and put 2015 definitions in the Old Testament. What do I mean by that? When they're talking about light bread, they're not talking about going to Harris Teeter in the bakery line and seeing Marita sliced light bread. Although that stuff is good with tomatoes and mayonnaise during the summer months for those of you that are native Southerners. But you know what it is talking about? It is talking about manna. In other words, they say, we have no bread, we don't have any water, and we hate this light bread. They made out as if they didn't have anything. But let's talk for a moment about what God did give them. Manna. Ma'am, how would you like it? You wake up in the morning, your husband wakes up, sort of scratches his chest and says, boy, I'm hungry. And you say, honey, if you go out there in that yard, you can get all you want. It's all there. Eat all you can, but don't leave any left over at the end of the day or it'll stink. No drive-thrus you had to go through. Always check your bag after you go through the drive-thru. Because they're missing something there. And it'll be the one time that you don't check. And you're three fries short and six kids are having a war over what's left. It's your fault. Don't blame that drive-thru attendant. It's your fault. You didn't check it. You didn't have to worry about anybody messing up your order. You didn't even have to leave a tip. And best of all, who made it? God. TV channels have proliferated so much. I mean, when I was a kid, you bent the antenna and the tinfoil a certain way, and you picked up four or five stations. Now, people pump in the Food Network. There are people that spend hours every day watching people cook food. And they're eating it while they're cooking it. I mean, it's changed so much. But none of those extraordinaires on the Food Network could put a candle to what God was cooking every day and putting it down for the Israelites. Some of you say, in our household, we never dare complain against Mama's cooking. Even if she did have a bad day, we didn't say a word. But God never had a bad one. I mean, Israel, every day they go out and they get it. I mean, here we are thousands of years later. Well, this is the way we are in our pious, sanctified way. We're like, yeah, what in the world's wrong with them? Every day they just go out there and they get all that they can eat all that they want. It's free. They don't have to pay for it. And God's the one who bakes it. And we said, this is great. But then somehow it started. I don't know how it started, but it started. Two men working together and one of them says, boy, what'd you have for supper last night, manna? Yeah, me too. You know, some things get old, don't they? Yeah, they do. Manna for breakfast, manna for lunch, manna for supper. Manna alive, I'm tired of manna. And then it ravaged an entire nation. You know, it's really easy for us to look at Israel down our pious noses and say, what's their problem? But you know, God's given us blessings every day that we do the same thing. It's a shame. We're coming up to Thanksgiving and some of us maybe need to have an overhaul in our lives and quit griping about what we don't have and thank God for what we do. You say, well, I've got a car. Cranks most of the time. You say, well, I've got a house, but got a lot of things that need to be fixed. You're a college student. You say, well, I don't have a house. I don't have a car. I just have a room. A few roommates, a couple of bags of ramen noodles. That's all I've got in this life. But I was reading a book several years ago by Randy Alcorn. I don't advise all of his positions, but it was on money, possessions, and eternity. And I've never had a book challenge me about the aspect of giving in my life like this book. But he cited in his book that we as Americans, even on the lower rung, have more than 80% of the world. And yet in our day of materialism that has crept into our own lives, we've become so dissatisfied. Instead of saying, we have no bread and we have no water, we say, well, we don't have this clothing, we don't have this possession, we don't have these things, and we too have become ingrates. You see, the devil wants you to long for what you don't have, and he wants you to despise the things that you do. He wants you to long for the things that you don't have, and he wants you to despise the things that you do. I'm talking to Christians. We're so unthankful sometimes. For Israel, it was bread and water. I ask you, for you, what is it tonight? First of all, we see a people discouraged. Number two, we see a people deprived. But then we continue on to see a people dying. I want you to notice in verse number 6, and the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much of Israel died. Now, I've never been one to like snakes. A good snake is a dead snake. My dad taught me as a boy, he said, son, don't kill a black snake, don't kill a king snake if you can get by with it. The black snakes kill rats and the king snakes kill copperheads. And we don't want copperheads. And while I tried to live by that maxim, there were times in fear I just shot every serpent. But God sent fiery serpents, which is Old Testament connotation of poisonous serpents. I've never been bitten by a poisonous snake. But they tell me when that poisonous snake bites that there's venom that all of a sudden begins to creep into your system and it creates a burning sensation. And here they're all griping and they're complaining, they're singing that chorus, and fiery serpents go out all over the place and bite those people, and now they begin to die. Some of you tonight, you say, I'm terrified of snakes. But could you imagine an entire nation being afflicted? The judgment of God. Why did the judgment of God come upon the people of God in this story? It was not because of homosexuality. It was not because of gossip. It was not because of murder and drunkenness. It was because of unthankfulness. Now, as a Christian, I'm really good at grading my sin. Well, this is horrible, and they did that. I can't believe they did that. I'd never do that. Boy, that you ought to wipe that phrase from your vocabulary, because apart from the grace of God, you better take heed lest you fall. But this judgment of God comes upon unthankfulness. Here's a real question. Now, let me comfort you tonight. It's not going to happen. But what if God sent fiery serpents into this place tonight to bite those that have been griping and complaining? How many of us would be dead? Now, this is not a shock factor. Again, you don't have to worry. We don't have them around here, hopefully. I'm thinking Kings Mountain is snake-free zone, right, Brother Ogle? But when I read the Bible, I think that way. I thought, Lord, in that day and time, of course, they're biting everyone, but if the fiery serpents came tonight, would I be afflicted? Would the judgment of God come? And when I see the plight of the nation of Israel, you know what I'm reminded of? I'm reminded of this, that unthankfulness always leads to despair and destruction. Yeah, we put a premium on being happy, don't we? Want to be happy. You talk to people out in the world, I just want to be happy. Well, let me tell you how not to be happy. Just go wanting everything else and despising what God has given you, and it'll lead you to despair, and ultimately it'll destroy you. God's judgment. I wonder tonight if there's some of us, we would say, you know, I've not been very, very thankful. And I've found that sometimes unthankfulness is not shown in just merely griping and murmuring, although that's very common. I don't like these clothes. I don't like this. I don't like that. I know that's unthankfulness, but can I tell you, unthankfulness manifests itself in another way. It manifests itself in a lack of expressing thankfulness. I find many times that's an intermediate step. By the time you hear somebody griping and complaining and letting the, well, there's not enough people singing in the choir, the basses are too loud, that man waves his arms too much when he leads them, and on they go. If you hear somebody griping to that point, listen to me, they've already passed the intermediate stage. But there may be some of us here, we hardly tell anybody thank you, much less the Lord. Can I tell you, to every young person in this room, there is one thing that I want to kick out of anybody in a younger age group, and it is unthankfulness. And we live in a day and time where we don't express our thankfulness to people. And I'm convinced if we can't even express thankfulness to moms and dads, what makes us think we're going to express it to God? It's like two words that have been lost in the human vocabulary. Thank you. We've forgotten how to say it. But there may be some of you tonight, you'd say, I'm not a griper or a complainer, but you never say thank you. You never give tokens of expression of gratitude to other people. And if you don't do it to other people, I highly doubt that you thank God. Folks, this is a disease tonight. We better treat it as such. But the last thing I want you to see is a people delivered. Don't you hate it when preachers only get through part of the story and leave you in death and gloom? Swollen, poisonous, dying, sorrow out in the middle of the wilderness, and say, come back next week and we'll see what happens. And then they forget and they preach something else and you're like, ah! Listen, we've heard enough of you lay people talk. We know what you say about us. But I have some preacher secrets I could share with you, but I'm not going to tonight. But a people delivered. How is somebody delivered from unthankfulness? You're here tonight and you've been in a rut. Have you ever been in a rut in your life where it's just like, I cannot get out of it? It's like day after day, it's the same old grind. How do you get out of that? Listen, God gives them a solution, and I want to apply it for us in a unique way tonight. Verse number 7, therefore the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned. That's a good place to start. It's sin. When I am thankless in my life and I am unthankful in my actions and my attitude, it is S-I-N, and I have to call it that. There's a lot of things we deal with in our lives. We deal with our eyes. We deal with our minds. We deal with so many different things, but we overlook this matter of unthankfulness. We have sinned against, we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. I think that says a lot about Moses. Had some of you been Moses, you would have just looked at them and said, hey, y'all got yourselves in this. You can get yourselves out of it. I'm tired of hearing your belly aching. Some of you, maybe you're a little less compassionate than others. You're like, well, I told you so. You just go around playing with God. But Moses had the heart of a shepherd. While those people, I'm sure at times, boy, he wanted to wring their necks. They come to him broken and contrite. He can't turn them away. He does all that he knows to do. He prays. And notice what God tells him to do in verse 8. And the Lord said unto Moses, make thee a fiery serpent and set it upon a pole, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. And Moses made a serpent of brass and put it upon a pole, and it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. What Moses does here defies common medicinal practice. I hear you have a hospital in Kings Mountain. We have one in Shelby. Anytime I go to the one in Shelby, they always send me to Charlotte. It's because my mess ups are so big, they can't fix them there. They say, go to Charlotte. Cut off a thumb, bust my head. They said, you're going to Charlotte. I should just go to Charlotte to start with. But if you walked into the emergency room and you had a huge swelling place on your arm and you said, I've been bitten by a snake. They wouldn't look at you and say, well, we'll tell you what we're going to do. We've got some woodworkers back here, and we've got some machine shop guys. They're going to build a serpent. They're going to put it on a pole. And when they get it there, you just look at it. You'll be all right. That'll be $400. No. And had they done that, you would have said, I'm going to Charlotte too. It's not a very conventional way to do it. But the thing I love about the Bible is when this event happens, God's not just doing it for Israel's deliverance during that day and time, but He's making a beautiful picture for us. And so imagine with me, people laying all over the place. They're lying down and they're afflicted. Their bodies perhaps becoming swollen, fever on their brow. And maybe as their eyes are about to close for the last time, somebody comes and says, Hey, look at that serpent. If you'll see the serpent on the pole, Moses said you'll live. And some of you are skeptics. You'd have said, be quiet, you're crazy. But you know, when you're dying, I think you're about willing to try anything. When you truly understand the state of where you're at between life and death, hey, at this point, you'll follow the directions. Imagine with me as an eye all of a sudden fastens on that serpent, and all of a sudden the vision begins to clear and the fever begins to diminish. The swelling begins to go down, but even more than the physical effect, imagine with me the release and the relief in that person's soul. To just wilt and say, oh, whew, I feel so much better. You know, I believe tonight that you and I can overcome this spirit of unthankfulness and ingratitude if we'll fix our eyes on someone too. John chapter 3, the Bible tells us in a precursor to verse 16. As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. And I believe tonight with all of my heart that the greatest cure to ingratitude is to fix your eyes on Calvary. I sent Brother Scovel an email earlier today about the praise chapel that we're going to have. And in that email, I said, I'd like for all of our songs to just be about the blood of Christ, or as many as we can during our praise chapel. I know we have our typical songs that we use, praise Him, to God be the glory. But I just wanted to be so specific. And you know what I found? I have found that when I fix my eyes on the blood of Christ and the cross and an empty tomb, unthankfulness flees me. Why? Because when you look at Calvary, you come to a realization. Nothing's ever happened to you like what happened to Jesus. And not only do you see the great injustice that happened that day, but you see the great love. Somebody who loved you so much in that while you were yet a sinner, He dies for you. You know, there's some people in our area that are roughnecks and hard to get along with. And in my flesh, if I see them broken down on the side of the road, I know what Christian courtesy says, but I also know what my flesh says. You look at somebody, now some of you are looking at me and you're like, I've never had that feeling in my life. Please forgive me for just showing you I'm a human being for a moment. But boy, inside of me, I look and say, well, you know what? But if it's somebody who let me borrow their lawnmower, somebody who gave me tools that I needed, listen, I in my human imbalance, I want to help them out all that I can. But it's a humbling thing when I looked to the cross and I realized there was a man who left heaven's glory and was robed in the likeness of sinful flesh, yet without sin, and He hung on that cross for me when I'd used His name in vain, when I had sinned against Him, when I didn't want anything to do with Him, He wanted something to do with me. I found that sometimes, even as a preacher, sometimes if we're not careful, we go long spans in our lives between the times where we thank God for Calvary and what He's done for us. It's a shame, but sometimes in our churches, the only time we really thank God for Calvary as a congregation is when we come to communion or the Lord's table. And it was at this church where I really learned the specialness of the Lord's table. Brother Surrett taught me the first time in my life I had really seen it up close. And to look around an auditorium and see people weeping whenever the Lord's table was being taken. That made an impression on me I'll never forget. But there are some of you here tonight, you've let your soul get despondent. You've let your soul get discouraged. And tonight, you know what God wants you to do? God wants you to come to the realization, say, you know what? As I've had to say on occasion in my life, Lord, I've sinned. Lord, I've let myself get into this shape. And to fix my eyes on Calvary. Now, for every one of you tonight, you have a choice. Just like I had a choice when I left a doctor's office. When that was done, that doctor gave me a prescription. He said, we're going to start with this and we're going to see what it does. And there's a part of us in our pride, we say, I don't need any medicine. But I went and I got it filled, scared to death. Is this going to work? It was amazing. After a couple of days, I felt like a new man. I didn't realize how bad off I had become. And I sure am glad I followed the prescription. Now, I will admit, a few years later, he's given me a few more prescriptions, and I take those two and feel pretty good. But tonight, the Lord Himself's given us a divine prescription. But the question is will you fill it? Let's bow our heads together in prayer. Our heads are bowed, our eyes are closed tonight. And during this invitation time, I just want to encourage you to just humble yourself in the Lord, before the Lord. You know, if you humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, He'll lift you up. When I fall and I confess, God says, all right, let's go to the next thing. You may be here tonight. While I did not dwell on a majority of this message on this subject, if you're here tonight and you've never trusted Christ as your Savior, you're missing the greatest thing to be thankful for. You may be here and you'd say, well, if people think I'm unsaved, or if I'm unsaved in a crowd like this, it's embarrassing. You know, there are people in this room, they were saved in services just like this, where God knocked on their heart's door in the midst of a message. I wonder if there's anybody here tonight, you'd say, preacher, I'm here this evening. One of two things is true. I'm either not sure, or I know that I'm not saved. And tonight, God's dealt in my heart as I've heard about Calvary. And you'd say, preacher, I'm here tonight. I'm either not sure, or I know that I'm not saved. I wish you'd pray for me tonight. Would you remember me in prayer? If there's anybody like that, our heads are bowed, our eyes are closed, would you just slip your hand up long enough for me to see it? Just long enough for me to see it. And you could put it back down. But tonight, anybody like that, as we wait just a moment. All right. Now the next question, it's not designed to embarrass anybody. It's not designed tonight to humiliate. It's just really designed to provoke us to thought and to see where we're at tonight. This is just a room full of sinners saved by grace. I wonder how many of us here tonight, you'd say, Brother Beal, I know that I'm a child of God. I know that I'm saved, but tonight, well, God's convicted me of an unthankful heart. You've gotten to a point where you expect everything, when in reality you ought to expect nothing and be grateful for everything. And I wonder how many here tonight, you'd say, Brother Beal, when I look at Calvary tonight, I see the ungratefulness, the unthankfulness that's in my heart. And as a child of God, as I enter this Thanksgiving season, you'd say, tonight, I want to run that ungratefulness out of my heart and life. And tonight, God has dealt in my heart as a child of God on this matter. Would you pray for me tonight as a Christian? If that's you, would you slip your hand up tonight? Thank you, several here. In a moment, we're going to have a time of invitation. I just invite you tonight, why don't we just humble ourselves and thank God for what we have? Tonight, why don't we just humble ourselves? And I'll tell you what, if we'll do that, it'll make that pie taste a lot sweeter in a couple of weeks. And you know what? It'll make a service a lot more meaningful if we'll obey the Lord tonight. Would you join me in standing, our heads bowed, our eyes closed? Father, tonight, Lord, I ask You that You'd help us to be painfully honest with You, and that, Lord, this evening, when we leave this place, that unthankfulness will be purged and their hearts will rise in gratefulness for what You've done for us. Lord, may You have Your will and way now in Christ's name. Our heads are bowed, our eyes are closed. As our musicians begin to play, I want to ask you tonight, if you need to come, would you do that? In a moment, we're going to sing, but would you just bow your heart before God right now? In a moment, we're going to sing, "Open my eyes that I may see." You say, "Preacher, I've let myself get into such a point. Discouragement has come, and as a result, unthankfulness has entered my soul, and it's causing me problem. It's causing me hurt." Tonight, look to Calvary. I want you to take your hymnals and turn to page 401. Brother Brubaker is going to lead us in this. Would you let God open your eyes tonight? Would you see these glimpses of truth and respond to the working of the Spirit of God? Brother Brew, as you lead us tonight, page 401.